Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
This is Manny.
And today's episode, we're going to get to that Arrow retrospective that we didn't make it to in the last episode. But before we get to that, we're going to talk a little Daredevil Season 2. And that's going to be it for this episode. It's going to be all focused on comic properties on TV. So I'm not going to be doing much talking. You're going to get to hear Jaden and Manny talk about their thoughts on these two shows. One of these days, I keep saying it, one of these days I'm actually going to get caught up enough on my comic reading through my huge stack enough to where I'm going to start catching up and binge watching these shows. So if only I didn't have that pesky day job taking up so much time, it'd be a lot easier.
This darkness is the light.
I'm just trying to make my city a better place.
You know what they call stuff like that? Gifts. I'm going to train you.
So Daredevil Season 2. Highly anticipated, of course. John Bernthal is the actor's name, I believe.
Yep.
Playing the Punisher. And, you know, we talked about it on the show before, how much I think he resembles the way the Punisher is drawn in the comics, especially when he's drawn by John Romita Jr. So why don't you go first, Manny? Give us your thought. Well, first of all, how many episodes is the season total? Is it 13?
Yeah, 13.
13, and how far are you?
I am up to 7, I think.
So a little more than halfway. When did season 2 come out on Netflix?
Yesterday.
Wow. So what are your thoughts so far, being halfway through?
Well, first of all, I wanted to take this time to thank Marvel and Netflix for making the decision of putting this out the weekend before Batman v Superman, so that I have something else to keep my mind on instead of how excited I am over the movie. And so obviously right after work I started it yesterday. It seems to pick up right where it left off. Just very good develop. The story developed very good. I really, really liked how they took the first two episodes and kind of really almost made him like a myth, kind of like almost, what's the word I'm looking for? They take the Punisher's character and kind of make it,
urban legend?
Yeah, kind of like an urban legend. Like it was a couple of guys. It was a whole, you know, they really make him so much larger than life that finally when he does come on screen, and it's that great episode when in the hospital, he's already larger than life. And because the Punisher is pretty well known, property, it really helps. Not to mention that, John Bernthal played also a very strong character in The Walking Dead. I mean, when he's walking down, it's just, he's just larger than life. And I really like that. What did you think of the way, Jaden, that they introduced Daredevil?
I really liked it. I thought this season, personally, I liked the last season, but it wasn't, like, even close to Jessica Jones for me. I would say I gave the last season a 7.5 or 8 out of 10, and it was pretty good, but I think that Jessica Jones is probably like a 9, but so far I think this is like a 9.5, and I really like the way it started. It was, I like the way, like you said, the Punisher, how they made him like an urban legend the first couple episodes. I thought that was really cool, because he was just mowing down these gangs, and nobody could believe that it was one person.
Yeah, I mean, to start off with mowing down so many gangsters, it kind of gives you an idea of what he's capable of and who he is. I mean, he obviously, through previews, we knew he was coming. But to see him cause that much damage and not even Daredevil can stop him, it really said a lot.
Now, is the Kingpin still around? Is he still a villain?
He's in jail.
Yeah, he's in jail.
Okay.
Yeah, and what's going on now that Daredevil has taken out the Kingpin, a lot of the other gangs are, I guess, fighting for territory, trying to take that empty spot in the from Trade in Hell's Kitchen.
Right.
So which is where Daredevil comes in with his vendetta against the Irish, I guess.
Yes. Yeah,
so and then also where the Yakuza come in and her and Electro Nacho's campaign against them.
Yeah, so that's not, I mean, it's not exactly the same as stories we've seen in the comics, but similar.
No.
Similar enough. We've seen this kind of general storyline play out before. You know, Daredevil manages to put the Kingpin behind bars, and you know, it creates a power vacuum, and the other gangs, criminals, kind of, you know, they're fighting amongst each other to see who's going to come out on top. Now, in the comics, whenever this would happen, though, Kingpin would still be relevant. He still would have, you know, clearly not the anywhere near the amount of power he had when he was on the outside, but even from prison, he's able to make his presence felt, I guess you'd say. Is that are they doing that in the show too, or is he completely a non-factor?
No, he's go ahead.
I mean, I don't know if Manny's got to this part, but I'm not going to go into any details because, I mean, I don't really expect people who are listening to really be that caught up on it, considering came out 2 days ago.
How far are you, Jaden?
I finished it yesterday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
So he pops up in this season. He does something that's relevant.
Okay.
Oh, right, I'm not there yet.
being that it's you know, only 2 days old, we're not going to talk any more about it just because we don't want to spoil it. Maybe we'll go into more depth a little later after everyone's had a chance to watch the complete season.
The last thing I will say about Daredevil is that I was picking up my car at my wife's job, and she's a manager over at Jack in the Box. And as she's handing me the keys, so she's over the counter in the back. She says, "I watched 4 episodes of Daredevil." And I said, "What are you doing? I thought we were supposed to binge watch it together." She said, "I'm sorry." And then I said, "No, it's all right. I had already watched 4 episodes." And we got into a heated argument over why are we watching it without each other? That's not what we're supposed to be doing. And I mean, it got pretty loud. I mean, there's customers and employees there looking at us like, "Are you guys really arguing over Daredevil binge watching?" And like, yeah, dude, it's kind of a big deal for us. As a matter of fact, if she's not asleep by the time we finish this, we'll probably catch a couple more episodes. Actually, she needs to catch up now because I watched a few this afternoon that she hasn't.
Terrible. Wait for your wife.
Malcolm Merlyn, you have failed this city.
My name is Oliver Queen. To save my city, I had to become the Green Arrow.
All right, now for the meat of the episode. Let's talk some Arrow. First things first. You go first, Jaden. When, if you can remember, did you first hear about Arrow, and what made you decide to give it a try?
Well, I first heard about it after Smallville finished, a few months after, I think, when they decided to put it into the making. And I was kind of mad because in Smallville, they had I don't remember what the actor's name was, but they had an actor who was playing Green Arrow in that show, and I really liked that actor as Green Arrow in that show, and I was actually kind of mad that they weren't going to keep him on as Arrow and Arrow. So I didn't end up watching any of it until about halfway through the first season. But then once I watched one episode, I ended up watching like 11 or 12 of them in a row. So, and I've been watching week to week ever since.
What about you, Manny? Same question.
I first heard about it. I think they're pretty close to being done with the first season, but someone had mentioned, it's like, yeah, he faced off with the Royal Flush Gang. It's the group I really like from the villains that I really like. I just find them interesting. And so that's when I decided to give it a try. I actually started with that episode specifically. And then I realized how grounded it was to reality, I guess you can call it, more than anything else. And then I went back all the way to the beginning, and kind of like Jaden, I've been following it week to week ever since.
Now, Jaden, you said you watched the first episode you watched was season season one, episode one?
Yes.
Because you heard it was good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right away, I mean, you said part of the reason you didn't watch it is because it didn't have that same actor playing Green Arrow that played him in Smallville, so...
Yeah.
Like, right away you were like, oh, I like the job this guy does?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm so happy they picked Stephen Amell. He's 10 times better than that guy would have been. I think I would have been tired of him by now.
All right, fair enough. I'm going to step back here and let you guys... why don't you give, like, a recap of the first season and your thoughts about it? And how you feel the progression of the story was during that first season.
All right, so the first season, you start out, Oliver Queen just came back to Star City, and he is, like, pretty quiet. He just got off the island, and he just is trying to keep his secret that he has all these, like, special skills, and he's going to try to save his city from what his dad has done, and he has all these names on this list that his dad gave him. And he's going to try to right the wrongs that his dad has been doing. That's how, that's where the "you failed this city" came from. Every single person on that list, he goes to them and tells them that. And at the beginning, he's definitely not a hero. He's definitely a vigilante because, for me, a hero is somebody who tries at all costs to save even, the villains if they can. And, vigilantes, they don't care the vigilantes will put people down, as long as it's for the greater good. So, in the first season, he kills the people that, he'll give them a warning, and then if they don't change their ways, usually, he'll just kill them.
Now, Manny, when Jaden says he got back from the island, what does that mean, the island?
Well, he had been stranded on the island Lian Yu. He actually had taken off with his girlfriend's sister, played by Katie Lotz, and so while they were on their dad's boat, they got shipwrecked, and he ended up on that island. And to this day, we're still finding out some of the things that happened on that island. The 5 years he was away, things that are going to affect him through the next few seasons, and probably beyond that, as we've come to find out.
So he was shipwrecked on this island, and he kind of had to learn how to survive, and that's how he got the skills to become Arrow?
Yeah. And there was, I don't remember who the first guy who trained him was, but do you remember what his name was, Manny, the Asian guy?
I do not, and I know it's somebody's, was it his?
It was Shadow's, like, dad, I think.
Right? Shadow's, yeah, I think that's who it was. You may be wrong, but yeah, yeah. That's who I think it was.
And he was the guy who was wearing the green hood when you first see the person on the island. He's the person who taught him how to use a bow for the most part. He's the person who kept Oliver Queen alive for the beginning of the part of when he was at the island. He tried to teach him, like, some hard lessons. Like, he gives Oliver a live chicken, and Oliver doesn't want to kill the chicken, but he ends up having to because he's starving. And, He's the one who trains him at first, and then later in the season he meets Slade Wilson, who is at the time as actually a good guy on the island. And he is the one who ends up training him towards the end of the first season on the island.
Is it Yao Fei?
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Google. So how do you feel that the first season, like, if you took the first season overall, because, I mean, obviously they didn't know if it was going to be successful or how successful it would be. They didn't know they were going to have a second season be renewed. Do you feel like the first season had a good beginning, middle, and end? Like, if the ratings had been bad and they decided to end it, did it have a good resolution?
For me, the first season is my least favorite season. I mean, this most recent season is pretty close, but, the first season, it seemed like you could definitely tell that the, production values were lesser, and that they were more focused on, like, the teen drama and that type of stuff in it, because that was the general demographic for the channel at the time. But as the first season went on, like, I think about halfway through, they started to make changes more towards what people were talking about. Like, I feel like the writers have really, as the show has gone on, they've adapted the show to what the viewers have wanted it to be more so, and I think that's what's really one of the best things that they've done about it, like the fact that they're willing to change stuff if the viewers don't like what they're seeing.
So by the end of the first season, you feel like it had a good... I mean, they probably knew by the end of the first season that they had already been picked up for a second season, but you feel like...
I think the first season was as good as... I'll rate it based on my watching of Smallville. I think it was as good as the best season of Smallville, which I don't know if that's really very high praise, but...
Well, Smallville's a little bit of its time, I guess
you'd say. Yeah. I think that the best parts of the first season was his time on the island. I don't really think that him fighting crime and his drama in Star City was really adding that much to the show, personally.
Now, Manny, do you feel like there was good character progression throughout the first season with both Oliver and the supporting cast? I mean, could you see him grow as a character?
Yeah, I did, but it's like Jaden says, it was on the island where I really saw him progress. I will say that I thought Tommy Merlin was a great character.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe not knowing where the show was going to go led to his demise at the end. And I thought John Diggle's character, just from the very start, you can tell he was going to end up being Oliver's almost like conscience for a while, or, you know, like a... I wouldn't say like an Alfred, because he's not his butler at all, or he's more, well, his bodyguard. But definitely he was going to have a big role in his character, their development. So even then, I thought they did try a little too hard to keep the CW feel to the show, because there was a lot of little like CW moments where they kind of lost me for a few minutes into an episode or something like that.
Yeah.
But by the end, obviously the ratings were there, and things would turn from there. But it's a really good season for his origin and how he became the Arrow. And as the seasons progress, I don't feel that the backstories are as good as they were from the first season.
Well, I mean, if it did have a CW feel or a little bit of a teen drama feel, I mean, it was good enough that you guys kept watching it.
Yeah, I think it was because of like characters like Diggle, and I think Slade Wilson was a great character, and I think Malcolm Merlin was also a great character. I think John Barrowman does a really good job as the main villain in that season. I mean, it was just, it's like he said, it was just for a few minutes every, like, pretty much every episode in that first season, where it was just like, it lost me. It was just like, ugh, this again, really.
Cringeworthy moments and dialogue. Okay, fair enough. How do you feel season two was overall, Jaden?
I think season two was, they took a ton of their, criticism in the first season, and they kind of cut the fat. It got rid of a ton of the CW drama, and I think that, and they introduced Katie Lotz as Black Canary in this season. So it was just, I think the second season was far and away better than the first season. Like, and I liked the first season, but the second season, like, if I was going to recommend this show to a friend and they didn't have a ton of extra time, I would tell them to watch like the last episode of the first season and just start with the second season, because I think that it's much better.
What about you, Manny? Your thoughts overall on season two?
Season two, by far, I think is the best season overall. In the beginning, Oliver has vowed to stop crime without killing criminals. There's also a lot of pulling, I guess, back and forth between him trying to be a vigilante, a hero, or also to run Queen Consolidated. We get a lot of Roy Harper. And obviously the best part of it all, I mean, we get Sarah Lance, the Black Canary, which was great. And then you get the main adversary, which is Slade Wilson, who does a phenomenal job, I think, as Deathstroke. And also that season is when DC, the producers, and CW gave Grant Gustin a shot as the Flash.
Yeah.
In episode 8 and I think episode 22. Episode 8, we just see him briefly come into town. And then 22, at the end of the episode, we see the accident that produces the Flash. So, you can really see, how this season, for producers, the wheels start turning and, ideas get thrown out there. They're maybe deciding to bend a little bit on their no metahumans or no powers, rule that they had set up, for the first season. And, so yeah, the second season by far best season of the show to date.
Yeah, it's very interesting because the way that they made Slade Wilson evil is they introduced a kind of Bane-like serum called Mirakuru, and that's like the main, that's like the main thing in the show. It kind of turns Slade Wilson evil. Basically, it makes him kind of feel like Oliver was the reason the Shadow died, and he needs to kill and everybody he cares about, basically. That's why he's out to get him. And I feel like they kill his mom in the end of the season, or somewhat close to the end of the season, and I feel like that's just like they got rid of most of the characters that people didn't like very much. And the main thing about this season that was like, I thought for almost like the entire second half of the season that they were going to kill Sarah Lance, because it was her and Oliver had a relationship for like most of the season, and they finally didn't at the end of the season. I was like, oh, phew. Dodge that bullet.
Now,
only briefly.
Yeah.
Now, is this the second season of Flash that's out right now?
Yes.
Okay, so he appeared in the second season of Arrow, and then he got his own show that came on the same season as Green Arrow season 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Time really flies. So, is it fair to say that season 2, with introducing the Flash and deciding to go ahead and have this venom-like substance similar to what Bane takes, to actually have, you know, superpowers in the show, is it fair to say that season 2 was much more about world-building? Not just the world of Arrow, but the larger DC TV universe, much more so than maybe like you could look at season 1 as more of a setup?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. But I feel like this season has tried to do that a little bit with Legends of Tomorrow, and I feel like they did it too much. They took too much away from the show while doing it. And in this season, they just had little like Easter eggs here and there. What were you saying, Manny?
Oh, no, I would say no. Just because his moments in the show are very brief, and they tie in very well to what's going on in Arrow. And besides those moments, you don't really hear about them, about Barry Allen or Star City too much, and it just stays focused on what happened on the island between Slade Wilson on the the Amazo, which is the ship that Ivan Ivo, yeah, he's the one who invents the Mirakuru. And then you have the moments like Moira Queen passes away, and then you have a situation where Roy Harper gets injected with Mirakuru. And you see the effects there, what happened. So it's on its own, but you can tell that they're testing the waters.
So I'd say it's this season still feels like it's a self-contained Arrowverse. It's not necessarily part of a larger universe.
I would say so. Also on this season, I forgot what to mention is this is kind of where we get Felicity Smoke in a major role. Like she was pretty big at the end of the first season, but she wasn't like part, like really part of the team yet. But this is where she really becomes a part of the team. Her, Diggle, and Oliver.
All right, let's talk about season 3. What are some of the what's the big overall theme of season 3?
Well, season 3 is mostly about the League of Shadow, the League of Assassins. And this is like really where you just realize that this is DC. This is pretty much the DC TV equivalent of Batman. Green Arrow is basically just Batman. And I really liked season three personally. I think I liked season two the best out of all the seasons, but I think season three had my favorite moments. But the one thing that really killed me about season three was like first episode, end of the episode, Black Canary gets killed, Katie Lutz gets killed, and I was just so pissed off at that because they were just teasing it and like you're thinking that she was gonna die like all of season two, and you think you dodged that bullet, and then she just gets like five arrows in the chest and falls off a building like immediately.
And she was your favorite character on the show?
Yeah, at that time.
You even liked her better than Arrow?
Yeah, I would say so.
All right, Manny?
Also, season three, Oliver sells his company to, or it's sold, well, the board sells his company to Ray Palmer. So Felicity has to not only work for Oliver in the shadows, but also for Ray Palmer as his secretary, I guess, or executive, somebody for a while. And I definitely agree. They start kind of... I didn't like the fact that Ra's al Ghul ended up being the main antagonist in the story, just because of how big he is in Batman mythology. So, and it is because of this that most people, including me, I agree that they've completely turned Arrow into the TV version of Batman. Because, I mean, Ra's al Ghul wants him to take over as the head of the League of Shadows. So, it had one of the great moments when he gets stabbed and thrown off the cliff. I don't know why, but that completely caught me off guard.
Yeah, definitely. And I was like, what's going to stop him from, what's going to stop this from happening right now?
Yeah, that moment, I remember, I was just, whoa, what? And then it just ends. And it's like, oh, well, happy holidays, guys. Like, think about it for about a month. And that was quite impactful. Also, season three is when, obviously we also get the introduction of the first season of The Flash. And we get the first, crossover episodes, featuring, Boomerang, which I thought were done really well. They teased him in a couple of episodes and it was done well. And then the two crossovers were, one on The Flash and then one on Arrow. I thought they were done really well. And that was really the cherry on top for more things to happen, for Ray Palmer to have his role expanded a little bit more to build the universe a little bit bigger. So, not my favorite season, but it's not bad.
Besides the fact that it was, the League of Assassins, and that's kind of a Batman character, and Ra's al Ghul is kind of a Batman villain, did you like the person who played Ra's al Ghul?
He was okay. I really have nothing against him, because honestly, I can't really think of anybody else who would have rather played. For some reason, my mind always goes to like the animated series versions of characters, yeah, and their voices and how the presence. And I think of Ra's al Ghul to have quite a presence, and I didn't feel he had it exactly, but it worked. I mean, it wasn't terrible casting.
Yeah, I personally liked it a bit. I mean, I think the guy was, I thought he wasn't very good in the first half of the season. I thought that he started to do a little bit better towards the end. I really like what they did with like kind of like the Black Arrow type thing towards the end, when they kind of made it seem like he was just completely crossed over, like he was about to, like he married Nyssa and he was about to just take on the League of Assassins for himself and become the new Ra's. Like when pretty much all of his supporting cast was in that jail cell and they were getting poisoned, and you were just like, I don't know how they're gonna do this.
Yeah. Also, this that episode you mentioned is finally where I realized that we're never going to get rid of Malcolm Merlyn, because he's that character who's he'll do something good to help you, and he'll stab you in your back the next episode, then he'll do something good later. And like, I mean, he can walk into like the Arrow cave, you can call it whatever, and yeah, they're going to be like, what are you doing here? But then they're going to kick him out. They never do. But at the same time, he does things where that are evil. So that's another thing I got from this season, is like, we're never getting rid of Malcolm Merlyn. He's gonna be consistently around. I will say this: this is the season where Laurel Lance, to me, got really annoying.
Yeah, because this is where she turned into Black Canary.
Yeah, is this where she trains with Wildcat?
I think if it is, it's towards the end. I think, yeah, it is. It's in the third season when she's training with Wildcat.
All right, in that case, that means that in season three, we get that epic moment where Oliver Queen shoots a boxing glove.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a big moment a lot of people talked about online. But it was so fast that if you weren't paying attention, you missed it.
Yeah.
And if you did see it, you were like, whoa! Oh, did that just happen? And, you know, hopefully you had a DVR or you were able to play it back real quick, because that was pretty cool. But, yeah, overall, pretty strong season. And you can really see that it's not just Starling City anymore. Star City is now just around the corner. Because even when... towards the end, when they got drugged, it was a Flash who came to Nabna Parbat to open the door to let them out.
That bugged me personally. I hated that. I felt like that was really a cop out. I was like, how is Oliver going to save these people? How is this going to get pulled off? And then just Flash comes and runs in, and it's just like he's kind of overpowered, I think. And it's just like, oh wow, this is how they're going to get out of this. It's like they wrote themselves into a corner, and they're like, well, I guess we can just bring the Flash in and have him get saved by him.
It actually bugged me more that Oliver Queen showed up to help Barry Allen fighting Zoom, and the episode before, because that's where he says, "I'm gonna need a favor," because yeah. I'm like, really, dude, what are you gonna do? They can barely contain him, and they have superpowers. What are you really gonna do? But yeah, he hits him with the arrow, and that really doesn't go very well, because he just shakes it out, vibrates it out, or whatever you want to call it. But I the other half of that. I guess you can call it favor, bugged me more than him going over and opening the jail cell.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like him saying, oh yeah, I have just this costume change for now. Like, it kind of really threw me out of the, it wasn't very believable, considering that he was supposed to be like Nanda Parbat, and he was like undercover, basically. Didn't really make that much sense. But so far in these three seasons, what would you give out of 10, what would you give each season, Manny?
Out of 10, that's a little bit difficult, just because each season has its strong suit, and then they have something that's not very good. For example, I guess the first season I gotta give it a 6, just because of how they were really cautious with what they wanted to do, and probably a little bit budget tied. Not to mention, like, overkill with the CW drama. But at the same time, it also has a really good, I guess you can call it a spine or backbone with that backstory of what happened in on the island. And so, yeah, I'll probably give that a 6, because and then season 2, I mean, season 2 was just great, because so much more was done, and then also the introduction of metahumans, I guess, just with the Flash, not to mention Black Canary, Roy Harper, Arsenal, or the beginnings of Arsenal, So I'm going to go with an 8 for season 2. Season 3, probably right in between a 7.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you got pretty much what I would give them across the board. I think if it wasn't for those for the island in the first season, I wouldn't have kept watching it. Like, it was just like every time they went back to the city, I was just like, oh man, can we just have more of the island? And there was that one episode where it was the entire episode was on the island, and I think that was my favorite episode of the whole first season.
Yeah, without the island, no question, maybe this show doesn't even continue.
Yeah.
It ends
and maybe then we don't have even a maybe we don't even have the Flash if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, just think about how critical Arrow has been to what is now the DC TV universe. I say it all the time, and I've actually got some people comment back saying, no, Smallville was the one that really started it all, but it wasn't. It was Arrow. What they did, I think, with the origin story in season one really set up everything else. And then from there, it was just a domino effect. And it was a matter of, okay, now we know we can tell good stories. Now can we add, I guess, metahuman superpowers without breaking the TV budget? Flash did that very well. They knew their limitations, and now you get this really, really cool mix-up, and you get Arrow, you get Flash, you get crossovers. Then you add Legends of Tomorrow, which I think that's getting a little bit too far, but that's another conversation. And then you get Supergirl for a separate audience, and now we're at the point where we may get some sort of Justice League of America or type deal where I mean they're all gonna eventually hopefully cross over, and it's all thanks to a really solid backstory for Arrow. And then also just a great job by Stephen Amell, Emily Bett Rickard, and David Ramsey, of course, John Diggle. I'm sorry to say it this way, but if like Laurel Lance was the one in that grave in a couple of episodes ahead, that sucks. But
I would be happy about it personally.
Is that
exactly?
Tired of her.
Is that from this season? You guys talking about season 4 now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming up. There's been teased since the very beginning of season 4. Somebody's in a grave, and it's an important character, and still have no idea who it is.
So, but season 4 overall has been a very uneven season.
I think so. I do not like
the first half.
Not like Damian Dark at all. I think that the. I don't necessarily think it's a bad actor. I don't even think he's necessarily doing a bad job. I just think it's like, I don't think he's written very well. He doesn't seem like a very good bad guy to me. He's mystical, and it just kind of seems like when he has his magic powers, he's just like has the force basically, and he's just overpowered, and nobody can even stop him. And it seems like Arrow right now is the setup. Well, the first half of the season at least was like the setup time for this season. It wasn't, I mean, for the setup time for Legends of Tomorrow. And it felt like they were like, oh, it's not doing as well as Flash. We don't want to mess with Flash because Flash is only on its second season and it's doing really well. So we'll just throw a bunch of stuff about Legends of Tomorrow in here. I don't know. It's been bugged. Like, they've been focusing a lot on Oliver and Felicity's relationship, but it's not even really, it doesn't really make that much sense to me. They keep doing a bunch of stuff that's like, doesn't make sense. Like, this season really is like, I'm gonna keep watching, but I really hope it gets better.
What about?
Oh yeah, I completely have to agree. His character is so up in the air. I mean, they have such a great actor, and the guy who's playing Damian Dark, and he's so vague. Like to this day, I have no idea what he wants. Like, what's he even doing in Starling City? And then. I mean, we already went through this whole thing with the relationship between Felicity and Oliver. We want to be together. We can't be together. I love you. I can't love you because you're going to get hurt. It doesn't matter. Let's be together. Let's run away together. We're back. I have a kid. I don't want to marry you. I don't know. And, you know, it's just it's CW at its best at that.
Yeah.
When you talk about that specifically, but I also agree with you, and that was my problem with the last crossover they had, is it seemed like some big giant preview for Legends of Tomorrow, and like it really took steam, in my opinion, all out of Vandal Savage, because how easily they were able to come together and figure out a way to defeat him. Sure, it took going back in time to do it, but still, it kind of took away a little bit from what they're doing now, Legends of Tomorrow. But I also think that season 4 is kind of hurt by the fact that maybe they went a little too big with Ra's al Ghul being the main antagonist in season 3, because now true. you got to top that. Season 1, it was Malcolm Merlyn and kind of setting up Arrow, Starling City, and all the characters of who they are and what their role is. Season 2, we get Slade Wilson, who is kind of the master versus the apprentice. Season 3, now you bring in Ra's al Ghul, who is the baddest of the baddest of the League of Assassins. Season 4, what are you going to do now to step that up? Because you need to have it needs to be a bigger threat, or else it gets boring. What are you going to do? You try Damian Dark, who has dark magic, and then all these repercussions from using the Lazarus Pit emerge, which I thought was which I think is fine. And then I think they were going in the right direction with even having to involve characters like Vixen, who I thought her episode was great. I think she did a really good job in involving John Constantine. I thought that was really cool. Because it makes sense to what they're trying to do and what they're trying to learn. But also, I think that now when you try to add more to his 5-year backstory, it's kind of getting a little complicated.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't really talked about that. In the second season, the backstory for him, he was still on the island. And this is when, on the island, when towards the end of the season, Slade Wilson gets the Mirakuru, and then he ends up in the very end of the last episode, they show him in a bed in China, so saying that, like, he wasn't always on the island. And I think that that's really when I didn't really care about the flashbacks anymore. It was kind of like they took out, like, in the first season, they were more focused on the flashbacks, I think, than his time in the city. And the second season, I felt like it was even. And now, ever since, like, the beginning of the third season, I feel like the flashbacks are very unnecessary.
No, I completely agree with you. The ones where they're in China, right? Not Japan?
Yeah.
Okay, those, I kind of saw where they were going with it. Especially once you add the kid to it, you add the, I can't remember her name, all I know is that she's Katana. You kind of can see where they're going with it and what was going to happen. It was really predictable. So, I thought, actually some of them, I really just fast forward through them and, because I wanted to get back to what was going on in the present day, and then later I would watch the next part of the backstory, and I really didn't feel like I missed anything at all.
Yeah.
So now we got a couple episodes left this season, and I'd really be interested to see where they go from here, because not only do they have to tie this up nicely, but you also gotta set something up for the next season. And you got a lot of things going on that you gotta really clean up before that. I really hated the fact that they added a son for Oliver. That yeah. just came out of nowhere. And
then they just wrote him out of it like that.
Yeah, I mean, alright, so you have a son, and it's like, oh, all right, and oh, well, they left, and it's like, you can't ever talk to him again. It's like, oh, okay. So, and then Legends of Tomorrow, it turns out that the mystery Arrow is Diggle's son, which it's like, oh, well, maybe it could have been Oliver's son. I don't know. It is just, this season has the potential of maybe being the worst.
I think that they could still save it. I mean, I'm interested to see who the big bad is, because it seems like Damian Dark is reporting to somebody. So I'm interested to see who that is. And, I mean, it has been a mess. I think this season, that's pretty much what I would sum it up, and so far is a mess. It's like, it's had its high moments, and I think that, like you said, Constantine and Vixen, they were really good in the show. And, like, there's points that I think are really good, but I'm sick of his sister as Red Arrow. I don't think that she's good at all. And I'm really cannot stand Laurel Lance as Black Canary. Like, it's not believable at all to me, considering what her character was like at the beginning of the show. And I don't know. I'm going to keep watching. I'm going to hope it's going to get better, but I kind of feel like they're taking their resources away from this, focusing on like Legends of Tomorrow and Flash. And I feel like they're kind of forgetting what started the whole DC TV stuff. And I hope that if they don't fix it this season, I hope that next season's better.
No, yeah, I agree, because Sarah Lance was trained by the League of Assassins. Makes sense. She could be more or less a vigilante because she's a ninja, with some technology, of course. But yeah, Laurel was taught by a boxer for a couple of classes, a couple of months, and now she's donning the same suit. I don't find her worthy to be the Black Canary. I find her to be very whiny in a couple of episodes. So, they need to fix that. And who knows, that may be the character that they finally decide that they need to act, because it's not working.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I know, but my biggest problem is how much they've been focusing on Diggle and his family. That screams a red flag for me, because a couple of the characters from, like, well, I mean, they do that in writing just to have a better impact when the character falls. You hype them up for a while. They did the same thing with Herschel in The Walking Dead. It is, and
Herschel in The Walking Dead? Spoilers, man.
I mean, my bad, sorry.
It's been like, two seasons ago.
Yeah, it's like three seasons ago, so if you haven't watched it by now, seriously. with a couple of other, as a matter of fact, with Beth, and that one I'll say, because that one got leaked on the internet, all over the internet, before the episode aired on the West Coast, and oh my god, that was the worst. Anyway, back to what we're supposed to be talking about. That's what worries me. You saw Diggle and his wife on The Flash a couple of weeks ago, which was a really good episode with King Shark. And then he's also been talking a lot about family life. And, you know, it worries me.
I'm hoping it's kind of like a Hawkeye in Avengers 2 type thing, where it's just like the writer's trying to throw you for a loop and trying to make you think that it's going to be this character, but it's going to end up being another one.
Yeah, I really hope so. And I do agree with you. Thea Queen maybe needs to hang it up, or maybe it's her. I don't know. There's a couple of characters who the show can do without, and yeah, at this point in the season, somebody's got to go to kind of, you know, up the ante and really set some things in motion. So we'll see who it is. How do you feel about the whole twist that one of the guys is for working for Hive is Diggle's brother, Andy?
I didn't really see that as that big of a twist, personally. Like, I mean, I know it was supposed to be kind of like a shock thing, but I don't know if it's the character, like the actor. I don't know. It was kind of whatever to me. I feel like that was supposed to have a lot more shock value than it really had for me. Like, I was like, oh, that makes, I guess that makes kind of sense. That's interesting. But I don't really know how Deadshot thought he killed him and he didn't kill him, because I don't think Deadshot has very many people that he thinks he kills. I'm pretty sure Deadshot just kills him. I mean, it's all right. His character's all right. I don't really mind him.
And what about something that bugged me about the season was when they saved Ray Palmer from Damian Dark, and then he kind of just I know he joins Legends of Tomorrow, but he kind of, for a couple of episodes, he's there, but he's kind of like, no, I'm going to be down here. I'm dead, so I'm just going to hang out. And then, what did you think of that?
I don't know. I think that was more just like more set up for Legends of Tomorrow. I mean, I thought that was kind of a waste. It was kind of like, I feel like the problems that they were dealing with, that Oliver and his group were dealing with, were kind of, if Ray Palmer was there, he'd make him too easy almost. So it would like kind of get rid of some of the conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we'll have to see. We'll continue to watch and report on it on here.
And I guess my last question for you is your thoughts on So Much Folk, on the city relationship.
I thought it was cool that he was running for mayor. I think that's a cool thing. I don't really think it makes that much sense. Like, I don't think Superhero should ever run for mayor. It doesn't. It's too much of a spotlight. I don't think he has enough time to be mayor of a city. I think that's kind of wishful thinking. But I like the idea.
Well, that's something that
the Queen
did in the comics. Was there was a time where he tried to become a politician because he felt like he should try to make change from within the system. Don't really know how long it lasted. I mean, that was back in the late 70s, early 80s when that storyline played out. And he did retire from superheroing at the time to focus all his attention on whatever. I don't think he ran for mayor. I think he was like a congressman or something. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about why do you think that they decided to make Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, whatever you want to call him. Why do you think they decided to make him the DC TV universe version of Batman instead of using Batman himself? Or like, why do you think they decided to do that?
I don't know. I think Green Arrow is very similar to Batman in a lot of ways. I mean, billionaire, doesn't have powers, just kind of good with, instead of like fighting. I mean, Oliver Queen in this is actually really good at fighting. I think he would give Batman a run for his money, even though Batman would obviously win. But I think they were just like, well, if we could do this with Batman, like, we can't use Batman, obviously, because I don't think they have money to have Batman, and I don't think they could pull in the star power that people would want for Batman. Plus, I don't know if they would be able to get the rights anyway, because they want Batman as a movie villain, I mean, movie hero. So, like, I think that they just kind of wanted to make kind of ties, or, like, because I think Flash is what Superman is basically in the DC.
Well, doesn't Warner, I mean, Warner Brothers owns the network, right? I mean, that's the W and the CW is Warner Brothers, so it's not, I mean, they have the rights. He's not licensed out to anyone else.
Well, I mean, they already started Arrow. I mean, I don't think at the beginning of Arrow they were willing to just give away Batman to anybody. I don't think anybody was going to use Green Arrow anytime soon when they started that.
I know, but I'm saying, okay, so obviously when they started it, they didn't say, they probably weren't thinking, oh, this is the first show in a family of shows about the DC Universe. We're going to put it on our network, and it's going to, you know, this one show is going to be popular, and it's going to spawn these other shows in this TV universe of DC. It's going to be Arrow, but it's this universe's version of Batman. We're going to make, because Oliver Queen's not a great fighter in the comics. I mean, that's, to me, that's the biggest, that and having the League of Assassins thing and wanting Oliver Queen to eventually lead them, whatever. Those are the two big things for me that are like, okay, yeah, this is, he's the DC TV universe version of Batman. Those are the two big things they did. But my question is, why do you think they did that? Like, why not just say, okay, well, this was popular, let's spin out a Batman show? I mean, they had the rights to Batman. You think
I think it would be too similar. I think they had, when they first started the show, they weren't planning on having a family of shows. I don't even think that it was on there. mind at the time. At the time, they were like, we're going to make a Green Arrow show. We're going to have, I think they had like 5 people make pilots for them under a certain amount of budget. They chose the best pilot, and then they ran with that pilot. And, like, the first season was very not Batman. Batman never would kill anybody. That's not what Batman does. And in the first season, Oliver Queen Arrow does kill a lot of people, actually. And it's not until the second season, I think, when they probably talked to the execs at the CW and were like, maybe we want to start thinking about shows that aren't just Green Arrow. Maybe we want to, or just Arrow. Maybe we want to do a Flash show. And then I think that's when they started thinking, well, we got to make them more like superheroes then. I think that the first season was more of a, like a crime drama. More like a crime drama with kind of a backstory that's on an island. And I think that's what they were going for. That's why they kept it so grounded in the first season. They didn't have any superpowers or anything.
So you think then the second season comes around, they decide, you know, maybe let's expand it. Let's create a family of shows. Let's, you know, see what else we can do, because this one's really popular. And then at that point, it's like, okay, well, you know, we took one of the more obscure DC characters, created a show, it's popular, but honestly, Green Arrow doesn't have the depth of character that Batman does. I mean, Batman's an A-list iconic character with, you know, lots of classic comic stories to kind of pull inspiration from and such. So do you think that could have been part of it? Like, okay, let's make some changes here. Let's make him, you know, more, let's take some of the things that make Batman work so much as a character and transfer those to Green Arrow, because it gives him more like depth of character and it gives more breadth of storytelling that we can do. Do you think that was it? Or do you think it was just like, let's just put these in because they're good story ideas.
When I say that he's like the TV version of Batman, I don't mean like there's a ton of differences between him and Batman. Like, he doesn't have the butler. He has much more of a team behind him. He's much more trusting. He's not as like grim as Batman is. I mean, he's somewhat grim, but at this point, he's actually has a pretty good outlook. I'm just saying that like he's like the version of Batman, and I feel like let's say that they did make a Batman show. If they were to have Batman killing somebody, there would be an uproar because everybody loves Batman. Everybody knows Batman. There's so much extra baggage that comes along with this character that you can't really do much with the character. And with Green Arrow, Oliver Queen, there's not much, like, people don't really know the character that much. He's not as set in stone. And if you change something, people aren't as mad because it's not this iconic character they've been following for years. So I think that it's not just the fact that it's like, I'm sure they would like to do a Batman show, but it's just, there's a lot more pressure and they would probably have to have a lot more money for that.
Any thoughts,
man? Yeah, I don't.
I said, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think if you're gonna do a Batman TV show, the level of scrutiny would be ridiculous. Every move he makes would be torn apart by bloggers and by quote unquote fanboys who know the character,
and podcasters,
of course. He's going to be doing something week to week that somebody didn't like, or that's not something Batman would do. Kind of like the movie version of Superman's dealing with now. I think
there's a Gotham show. How much scrutiny is that getting?
It's getting a lot. I mean, come on, Batman is what, 12, 13, and Victor Freeze is already running around with an ice gun. That's ridiculous. But you kind of take it for what it is, as its own show where it's focusing on backstories for villains and not necessarily being in continuity with anything else. But with Green Arrow, you know, more or less some people know who Green Arrow is, but a lot of people don't know who he is also. You got a lot more wiggle room to of course, there's people who read his books and know him fairly well, but most people don't. So you can make changes in the character, adapt him to certain situations or a certain characteristics that you want him to have, like Batman, and you necessarily won't bat an eye as much as you need to make some TV adjustments to Batman, then you'll get a lot of scrutiny. And then you'll even have people probably saying things like, well, if you're not going to make Batman show correctly, then don't make it at all. I think that's the deal. Also, we have to remember that in 2012, the same year that the show started, Arrow, Batman The Dark Knight Rises came out, and right after that, kind of Warner Brothers was kind of up in the air as to what they were going to do next. I think Man of Steel was what they were working on at that moment, and then they weren't too sure. I think Warner Brothers itself was dealing with the fact that they got a new CEO, and he's the one who decided to take Man of Steel and all the other DC properties to the next level. But yeah, you need a character kind of grounded. I agree with Jaden. They did the whole dark side Arrow, and then that hopeful, kind of almost annoying side in the Flash. And they built around it, and to some degree it works really well. And because they're not one of the Trinity, as most people call it, the scrutiny is a lot less than if it would be Batman, Superman, or even Wonder Woman, which they tried to start up, and it just didn't work out.
All right, any final thoughts about Arrow, Jaden?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything.
What about you, Manny?
If you haven't taken the time to watch it, and you're enjoying some of the other shows, just take some time and really see where the whole DC TV universe kind of started. What we see and enjoy now really has a lot to do with that first season, and like we talked about, that the backstory to Oliver Queen. And then the second season with that amazing Slade Wilson Oliver Queen matchup that was done so well, and Slade Wilson was cast so well, and then enjoy that forward as your TV canon, I guess you can call it, because from here on out there's still more things to come.
Actually, I do have one thing. For a season, if you're going to watch Flash and Arrow, I personally would watch season 3 of Arrow alongside. I would watch like episode 1 Arrow, episode 1 Flash, episode 2 Arrow, episode 2 Flash, because I think that there's, even if there's small things, they do have crossovers that's really cool, and they'll make references to each other every once in a while. And I think that if you watch them separately, you'll kind of miss out on those little details. And I think for the same thing on 4 also of Arrow and season 2 of Flash, I think that you get just a little bit more out of it, and it's kind of cool.
Is Slade Wilson ever referred to as Deathstroke in the show?
I think he is a few times in the second season.
And then my other question is, so season 4 he starts calling himself the Green Arrow, right? Is
yeah,
that to distinguish from kind of the vigilante things he'd done in the past?
Well, in the end of the third season, he kind of, like, the Arrow takes the fall for some stuff that happened, and he needs to kind of go underground, so Oliver actually goes on vacation with Felicity for between the third and fourth season, and kind of gets, like, some time off in between all of this craziness that's been going on, and Roy Harper takes the blame as and claims that he's the Arrow, and he fakes his death, basically. And so you can't have an Arrow, because that would mean that, well, they thought that Oliver Queen was the Arrow, and when they found out that Roy Harper was, he died for it, and now he didn't die, but he ended up taking the fall for it, so he had to go take another name for it, or like take another identity. He actually got in the third and the fourth season, he decided to become Green Arrow. because he needed to come back under a new alias, which I think is kind of stretching it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't the public still think of it as the same guy? I mean, he looks the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you got to kind of suspend your belief for it a little bit, but...
Interesting.
Okay, so for season 5, I have already picked out who they're gonna, who their main antagonist is gonna be, and I think it will work.
Who is that?
Black Mask.
I would be very interested to see how they would interpret him into the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's another Batman villain.
I know, but that's the only one I can come up with. kind of like that, maybe more Wilson Fisk on. Without his medication type guys. but I think, you
Wilson
know,
Fisk,
having
the Kingpin,
kind of, you know, it would be similar.
Okay.
But I just think that Black Mask with a couple of other B-listers from different properties, because obviously our Green Arrows isn't very fast, I guess. I mean, who's his rogues gallery?
Merlin, Count Vertigo.
It's been done.
That's it. That's
twice.
Yeah. I mean, Vertigo, yeah, so, I think, was done pretty poorly, honestly, but...
Yeah, they tried twice with two different people, kind of.
Yeah.
I didn't think that did very well, but I mean, if you're going to keep pulling from Batman villains, Black Mask is someone who's rarely used. I mean, I know they used him in the video game and recently in the Red Hood movie. But for Arrow, he would work really well.
All right, here we go. From Newsarama, the top 10 greatest Green Arrow villains of all time. Number 10, China White. Although China White has only been around since 2007, the South Pacific drug kingpin quickly climbed to be one of Green Arrow's signature villains. Known in criminal circles as the Queen of the Pacific, Chen Na Wei was responsible for stranding Oliver Queen on the deserted island, which forged him into the hero known as Green Arrow. In the hit TV series Arrow, frequent superhero film alum Kelly Hu plays China White, this time as the leader of Starling City's branch of the Triad. So I guess she's already there. Number 9, Onomatopoeia. This was created by Kevin Smith and Phil Hester during their run on Green Arrow. A simple masked villain became a top threat, which is with its deliberate, efficient methods and a mimetic repeating of sound effects in an eerie manner. One-on-one, Green Arrow was never able to defeat Onomatopoeia. He put Connor Hawk, which is the comic version of Oliver Queen's son, in the hospital and went to finish the job and was only turned back when Oliver Queen had backup from Black Canary. Onomatopoeia's modus operandi is to kill non-powered superheroes, something Green Arrow and Batman both share. And although this is a Green Arrow list, the ability for Onomatopoeia to stand up to Batman as he did in Batman, the widening gear only broadens his threat level to be on this list. So, I don't know much about that villain, but it would be interesting to see how he would work in a TV setting, I guess. Komodo, which is, he was introduced in the recent Green Arrow run by Jeff Lemire. It's another adversary that has a bow and arrow, so I don't know that would work, because there's already Merlin, right?
Yeah.
Who, Cupid, again, another bow and arrow type villain, a female, so not sure that's the greatest. Constantine Dracone, step aside, Elektra, there's room for more than one Greek assassin. Not sure what series of Green Arrow that was in, but the picture shows him jumping with a bunch of arrows being shot at him and he's catching them. I don't know what his powers are. Never heard of him, actually. Number 5 is the Clock King. That could work, I guess. Actually, he's already been on the show, right? The Clock King? A brilliant thief and safecracker?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
So maybe they could bring him back and kind of up his threat level?
I don't know. I feel like at this point, all of the villains you just mentioned, it's kind of like they're not really up to par at this point. Like, Oliver Queen would just wipe the floor with them. It's like Manny said earlier, with Ra's al Ghul being the big bad last season is kind of hard from the top of this season. I feel like that's kind of one of the things that they're struggling with like Damian Dark, is like putting like Oliver against somebody who has superpowers or even magical powers is kind of just like kind of puts him out of his own wheelhouse. I think their best off would be if they introduced a new villain, like one that they make up themselves.
Well, number four is Brick, who has mild metahuman abilities such as invulnerability and super strength, but his real power lies in his influence and intelligence when it comes to matters of crime in Star City.
They already used Brick.
All right, moving on then. Number three is Deathstroke, who's also been used. Number two is Count Vertigo, and number one is Merlin. So I guess you're stuck with kind of using the route that Jaden just mentioned, which, you know, that's kind of what they did with Damian Dark, though. I mean, I remember when we first found out that he was going to be the villain for season four, and we looked him up, and he has little to no history in the DC universe, and he certainly doesn't have any mystical powers. You know, he's appeared in a couple books here or there. So, yeah, maybe it's just a matter of, you know, introducing somebody specifically for the show, and it... I mean, maybe that's they're at that point. You know, they need to introduce not someone just to be in one season, but kind of think of it like Spectre in James Bond, you know, where it's a organization that, you know, ebbs and flows, you know.
Yeah.
And they kind of get a big scheme going, and that can be like the kind of the backstory for that season, or the main story for that season. You know, they have some crazy plan, and Oliver's got to stop it. And he stops it, and it's like a setback for that organization. So then they're maybe kind of be in the background, but eventually they'll come back around with another crazy idea. So maybe something along those lines. I mean, there's plenty of kind of secretive and subversive organizations in the DC universe that they could pull from. So,
well, like what comes to mind for me is, considering I just watched Daredevil, is like this last season Daredevil didn't have a big bad necessarily. Like there was. The Hand was involved, and the Punisher and Elektra had some like conflict with Daredevil, but there wasn't necessarily a big bad, and I thought this season was amazing. So I don't really necessarily think that there needs to be a big bad. Like you said, like that would be good if they just had like a good or a big organization, and I feel like they had that with they have that this season with Hive, but they're still just making Damian Dark just like the head of it, basically, or so far he's been the head of it. And all of his like henchmen and the smaller dudes that just get kind of mowed down and are just kind of useless.
We'll definitely have to sit down with Mark Guggenheim at San Diego Comic-Con this year and tell him what's up.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this Spotlight episode on Arrow. We want to thank everyone for joining us. Just a reminder that we are on iTunes, just so search for the Comic Source, that's us. And please, any 5-star reviews you could give us are greatly appreciated. Really helps out. You can also go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com, where you can find all the episodes of our podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there. Check out the sketch gallery. I just recently added a bunch of sketches. Still have more to come to add. And then, of course, you know, we're getting new sketches all the time. So you can check out that there. Also, you can contact us through our website. Just click on the Contact Us link. There's also links to Manny's written blog and my written blog as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also, we're on the Facebook. Just do a search for the Facebook. That's us. Also, Instagram. I don't know that I've mentioned on the show before. We do have an Instagram. Do a search for the Comic Source. That's where I usually take all my pictures when I'm at a convention. I take them with Instagram, and then it goes up on Twitter and Facebook. So if you have Instagram, you can follow us there. What else? Upcoming next weekend, Manny and I will both be at WonderCon in Los Angeles, California, for the big DC Rebirth press event. And I'll probably be recording the entire thing. And then putting it up as a individual podcast. But if you want to watch it live and hear all the exciting news, DC will be streaming it live. So just go to their website for the details. And if you're going to be at WonderCon, send us a tweet. Let us know. We'd love to meet up with you and take a picture of some of our listeners. It's always great to meet people that are fans of the show. Let's see. Anything else you want to mention? Upcoming, we have some special spotlight episodes coming up on things like the changing relationship of Batman versus Superman over the years as kind of a prep, I guess you'd say, a prep episode for all of you that are going to go see Batman versus Superman next weekend. Not all of us get to go see it on Monday like Manny, just a few short days away, so keep your eyes out for that. Once again, everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Later.
Good night.